You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 338 of the Centurion's favorite podcast. Jeremiah Morrill, joined by executive video producer, audio engineer, coach, and show cheerleader, Mr. Zach Burcham. Your co-host today.
Uh-oh.
You know that now. It's official.
Yeah. I just found out like 30 seconds ago. I just as much training as I have at my current job, though. So I think I'll try.
You'll be okay. Dakota's at home taking care of some stuff. We have a fun show planned. We've got two county commissioner candidates here, Susan Hoon, who's currently a county councilor, and the incumbent Southern District Commissioner, Bobby Plummer. They'll both be on your ballot. If you are a resident of Henry County, Indiana, registered voter, still time to register. So if you live here, go get registered tonight. But they will both be on your ballot if you pull a Republican ballot. And then one of them will advance to the November election. So that's what we're talking about here. They represent the Southern, basically to be a county commissioner for the Southern District, you have to live in like the Southern third of the county. But the entire county votes on it. That's the way the rules work in Indiana. So, even though it's not your district, if you're a voter here, it applies to you. This show is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh, but you'll always learn something new. Just did our customary 15 or 20 minute Patreon. Zach, you guys had some fun without me over the weekend in Fantasy IndyCar. Did not go well for me.
No.
And if you want to hear how badly it went for me, join the Patreon and you can hear about my traumas.
If you got points for first out, you'd have slayed.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good. Patrons that we do want to say thank you to. $50 more a month at the beginning of every episode, you, your business, your thing gets a shout out. John Phillips of Andy Moore Buick GMC, also the former city council and now county council candidate. Thank him for his continued support. Anthony Meyer, Different Breed Trucking, and Sports Corner of Newcastle. Blake Reese, I just dropped off a bunch of shirts. I'm getting some Boss Hog swag made for myself, Zach. I've got a bunch of PFGs that I bought. And I said, these are too blank. I've got the big logo and we're going to start wearing those on here. So that's the identity of the show. Me wearing my vintage shirts as we head into summertime. Because I sweat too much in a polo. That's what the audience wants.
I'm not ready for that season. I'm not ready for like sweating. Yeah, I want windows open season.
I practiced in February. You know, we went down to the Caribbean, and that first 3 or 4 days where you're at 85 degrees with 90% humidity, you're totally in it again. It's instantaneous. And we'll get that May 12th. It'll be 40 degrees, and then May 17th it'll be 92 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then by June we'll be good to go.
Carb day.
Yeah.
It usually skyrockets on. As a matter of fact, the last couple of years, it's been between Carb Day of the 500, Memorial Day weekend. So Friday and Memorial Day.
Yeah, Friday, you're wearing a hoodie.
I'll wear a jacket to the track on Friday. And then race day, it'll be 97 degrees. And you'll see like this, like the heat between, like downtown will be like a mirage. That's the way our weather goes.
All of that said, I'm getting some shirts made over at Sports Corner. Got to say a special thanks to our candidate series sponsors. Wylands Flowers is back. They have been a sponsor of this series every year since it started. The official florist of the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. They do all of Zach's bouquets because he sends out like 14 a year. You are like the florist king, husband of the century.
I got a lot to make up for.
And they've done all of the weddings on the show as well. So Dakota's wedding, my wedding, they're awesome. And then the big new sponsor this time is the Ink and Ale Brew House, which I'm very excited to get to sample some of their stuff on Saturday down at the Newcastle on Tap. But they're actually going to be open, hopefully, by the pub crawl Eclipse weekend. Mm-hmm. So people are going to get a chance to see it. They're going to be inside of the Courier Times building. And they're going to be a place for parties, for corporate events. They're going to have an axe throwing site, a golf simulator, their own beers, and then burgers and smash burgers. So really cool. Another awesome addition to downtown, and excited to have them as a part of the show. All of that said, I've talked way too much. Let's hear from the candidates. We'll start with Susan Hoon. I don't think you've been with us for like 4 years, right? It's been a minute.
It's been about 4 years.
Yeah.
Since I
pulled that back around. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. Remind our audience about yourself, your history, and maybe some of the motivations that said, hey, you know what? 2024, I want to run for county commissioner.
Yeah. So I moved into Henry County 9 years ago. My husband and I wanted to get out into the country to raise our family. We've got six kids. I homeschool my kiddos and active in Memorial Baptist Church here in the county. I originally got into politics here in the county because of wind. Well, seems like a very long time ago now. And my first run for commissioner was 8 years ago as an independent candidate. And then followed by that with running for council. I served a 4-year term on council and then was reelected and finished the first year of my second 4-year term on the council. And I have learned a lot about local government since and have found that wind is important and there are many other things that are very important in the county. And so, and still learning now.
All right. And Bobby, you were with us last year in the primary cycle,
yes,
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost track. We've done so many of these now.
Look, years just go by. You could have said I was here last week, and I said probably.
Probably was. And if you're an elected official, you have pop-in privileges down here, so they're just a block away. So I never know if they just come in and have a bone to pick. Sometimes on a Thursday, we'll just have people show up. Tell us about yourself. Remind us.
So I have lived most of my life here in Henry County since I was 2 years old. Most of it in Strawn. I graduated from Tri-High, go Titans. Shout out to them and the difficulties that they've had, with all the road construction. I went to IU, got my business degree, in a long time ago, 1985. Older than you are.
No, I'm an 83 model.
Are you an 83
model?
I'm
an 83 model.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. Well, so at least you were two when I was graduating. I have worked IT for 36 years, 22, coming up on 22 years, self-employed. And I got into the race, kind of the wind, also brought us to county government, in 2016. And then in 2019, made the decision to run, and made the decision to run again. Cause I think that, it takes a couple terms to, see everything through that you're working on. So decided to go ahead and put my name back in the hat.
Well, very good. So the show notes we're going to work from are a guide. They're a general theme of kind of where we're wanting to go. If you want to copy these, the show is supported by Patreon. So patreon.com/BossHoggerLiberty. You can join there. You get into a special Facebook group, and then the show notes get dropped in there. So before every episode, once they're available, they're there. So you can kind of follow along and see where we're going. But it's conversational in nature. So while we have an idea of where it's going to go, the folks in this room are kind of what decides what happens. We'll stay with you, Bobby. Mm-hmm. The county has been investing in building preservation, and you know, there was some talk of what investment can be made, and I think this came from some of the ARP money.
Yes.
So there are three main buildings in the downtown corridor, and then there's some others around the county as well. I wanted to know what the decision was, or why we are where we are with the courthouse, Justice Center, and their office building, which I think we call the
Masonic building.
Masonic.
We
temple.
Refer to the Masonic building, but it really says the Henry County building.
Yeah.
But everybody refers it to the Masonic building. So over the last 3.5 years, we've been doing a lot of things with buildings. We have been liquidating those that we no longer need. That was a drain on the county's budget. That being the what we refer to as the Old Hope building, where I believe MTB is now. We liquidated that. We liquidated the annex building. unfortunately, that is coming back to us, but I think we have a plan.
It went so well, you get to sell it a second time.
It went so well, we get to sell it a second time. And we've got the Walmart Outlot is on the market right now as well. So, you know, liquidating buildings at the same time that, you know, over the years, and we all know how county governments and budgets work, and look, the amount of money that we've spent on just maintenance on the current buildings is astronomical. Thankfully, we've had ARP money to assist with upgrading the HVAC at the Justice Center and different things.
How did we end up with a building at Walmart?
That happened. I'm not sure. Well, it's just a lot. It's where the car wash used to be.
Okay.
I think that was Walmart. I think sold it to us for like $10, if I remember correctly. Back in 2010,
they must have been tax evaders. I don't
know. I'm not sure when actually I was looking at something else, and Commissioner Delling was in at his desk, and I'm looking through something on Beacon, and I was like, what? And I pulled it up. I said, did you know that we own some ground at Walmart? And he said, no.
Wonder if there was ever a plan to do anything.
There was a kind of a vague plan, something with EMS.
And, I heard they wanted to put an ambulance center there or something at one point.
Yeah, and kind of work with IBT. It was a vague plan for that. And so it was Commissioner Tarantino, Dellinger, and I, and we used ARP money for it. Requested a study done by DLZ of what we needed to do with to maintain or upgrade, rehab the Justice Center, the courthouse. The main focus has always been the courthouse and the Masonic building. So that plan was put together, and it was an eye opener because with the four priorities, they ranked them 1 through 4. It was in excess of $11 million.
Of updates and repairs.
And so the council bonded $5.7 million for that, or 5.8, I think it was. And so we put out RFQs, and DLZ is now working on the scope, which we have a main scope, and they're tweaking it right now. We asked them to add some other projects to that since we do have the ARP money, about $4.5 million left of ARP funding, that we could potentially do a little bit more. But we're in the process of, do we want to do these things, or do we want to just stay with the original bond?
All right. Susan, do you have any, this is a conversation that if you take over as commissioner, you're going to, this project's going to be a big part of your world, I'm sure. Any comments on the direction and the future of the buildings downtown?
No, from just as Bobby said, there were more repairs than what needed to be done, but I think they've done a good job prioritizing. And I think that I've heard some mention of using some of the funds also for YOC renovation. Mm-hmm. So that would be something too. So when we had originally started the process, we had talked about if we had $6 million from the bond and $4 million from ARP funds, we could do almost everything on that $11 million. But then you don't always know what you're going to get into when you start working on old buildings. So trying to decide how much contingency should be held is something that's important too. And then now trying to hold some of those funds back for potentially renovating the YOC.
Now, what the YOC is, the Youth Opportunity Center?
Correct.
Yes. And that is out near Memorial Park?
Correct.
And is there a I know the county's got an inventory of buildings. Is there an anticipated future for that structure?
So the council hasn't been involved in any of those discussions.
Okay.
But I have.
Or I guess as a commissioner, your vision for what that should be or could be?
So without being involved in any of the discussions, I don't have any of the background. I know that it was used for youth at some time. I know that it was originally a successful model. And then it was not. So financially, it wasn't viable. We started sending our youth to Delaware County. And then in the past year, that also has not become a financially viable option in Delaware County. So I definitely have a concern that it's still not a financially viable option to reopen here.
The building's been leased out, right?
To a third party? I'm sure not up to code what it would need to be now to actually hold juveniles. So I have no idea what it would cost to make it that and what it would cost to operate. But those are things that, I would, step into too. And I definitely would want to back up and be privy to those conversations because I'm not convinced it's a good idea, but it could be. I just haven't been part of those discussions.
All right. Bobby, on the YOC.
So the YOC, yes, it is leased to True Harbor. They house young ladies. So this conversation started with Judge Witham and Susan Lightfoot to look at bringing it back. When the youth center was opened, I believe it was run by the county, and things changed at the state requirements changed, and it was just not able to continue. So when Judge Witham brought this to us, we actually did a tour out to see what would need to be what shape the building is in. Obviously, the half that True Harbor is in is fine. It's the other half; it's the more secure area. So we did a tour with that, and we have also brought in a company that's willing to look at running the facility instead of the county running that facility. And we are just in the beginning stages of feasibility of this. And then Resolve Tech just finished going through inventorying everything, what's working, what's not working, what needs to be fixed. And we're waiting on a potential cost for that. So this isn't something that's going to open up tomorrow. I do know that we have several counties that are interested in contracting for placement of their youth with us. We also have several counties who are interested in potentially putting in funds to help do whatever renovations that need to be done for this facility. So this was, like I said, this was brought to us by Judge Witham and his want to have our children closer. So because we don't just house at Delaware, we house all over the state. And it is an issue when you have a youth in Vincennes and their parents are here, whether they've been charged with something or not. You know, you want them to be able to be close to their family.
The other big building project that we kind of hear is on the horizon is a potential expansion or the additional pod of the county jail. Mm-hmm. So we opened a facility up in 2022. And now we're hearing it's time, it's full. We had a judge candidate on last week, and we were talking about ways to potentially reduce the headcount, mm-hmm. but we're getting at a point where we're starting to hear a lot of local officials talking about maybe needing to pull the trigger on adding on.
Mm-hmm.
What's the from each of you? What's the perception there?
So pull the trigger of starting the discussions, because we know that this, you know, it's a multi-year project as well and in planning. The discussion started. I went to Elevatus probably in July or August, because at that point we were. Our daily counts were well above what they're supposed to be. And so I drove to Fort Wayne just to have a conversation, say, hey, you know, what would something like this look like? They came down and did a technical review or, you know, tour with the sheriff and his staff probably in, I want to say, August or September. Months get away from me. And then they, based upon the sheriff's ideas and the sheriff's requests, they presented a drawing at our last commissioner's meeting, just as a starting point idea, not anything in stone, just to kind of start that conversation. I would love for the jail to only have 10 people in it. But unfortunately, that is not where we're going. It's consistently staying the headcount is a little bit lower now. I mean, it's consistently around where we need to be, but we are still under the federal guidelines with our settlement with the ACLU. So, you know, they also get those counts every day.
That's in compliance with what's required.
Yeah. So they also get those counts every day. We want to make sure that we're not going to get behind the eight ball. You know, we wanted to start those conversations sooner rather than later, because obviously, you know, the council is going to have to work to figure out how to finance and, you know, what we can do, what we can't do. You know, do we need to add 192 beds? Do we need to add 100 beds? Do we need to add, you know, so those are long conversations that will take a while to sort out and move forward.
All right. And then from your side, Susan, you're currently sitting on the council, which would be responsible for financing this,
right?
Potentially in the executive role. What's your perception of the facility that opened in 22 and a possible need to add on?
Yeah. So when I stepped into office in 2019, we stepped into the need for a new jail, and it was urgent because we were under a federal lawsuit. And so there was a lot of discussion at that time of can we afford to build a jail big enough to house all the inmates we currently have, and what should that process look like? And so we passed a 0.2% jail tax, which was the maximum jail tax at the time, which brought in enough to cover the bond for this jail that we have right now. And my perception of the project is that it was run very well, you know, on time, on budget, under budget. I think it was a successful project for the community. It went someplace where the prison already was, and so there wasn't a lot of upsetness about that. But at the time, we had a lot of discussion financially about operational expenses, and we talked about how initially it would not cost more to run the jail significantly because we'd have lower repairs and we'd have new furnace, new equipment, more, you know, better insulated. But I think that what we're seeing now is it is costing more to run that jail. And we just had a conversation tonight about needing additional nursing staff, because as we increase the number of inmates, now we need additional nursing needs, and we have costs increasing. So our inflation, you know, medical costs are going up and food costs are going up. So the cost of running the current pod is significant. And from the council perspective, looking at building a second pod, we would need another 0.2%. We would need that to...
So you would need an additional increase.
I'm just talking off. I'm saying roughly, you know, you would need the same amount because you would bond and
for the capital, not for the capital, but for the operating costs.
So right now we have 0.2% for capital and operating together.
Okay.
And I'm saying, even though this is just a pod, construction costs have gone up a lot. So we could potentially need that same 0.2% and operating expenses. And right now we're struggling with our operating expenses increasing. So that's just a concern from an expense perspective. And so I would like to see the project, I would like to be part of that brainstorming process now, honestly. So what all options on the table, what process improvements, what other pod options? So one of the councilmen talked about...
You're currently president of the county council.
Vice president. Correct.
But you're not in that conversation at this time?
No.
Conversations really haven't started.
Okay. Yet. All right. All right.
I was just going to mention, you know, so there have been talks even of a temporary pod that could be purchased, or just how would we look at every possible option? And not being part of that process, some of the council are discouraged. We want to look at every possible option because we just see, and it's not just jail operational costs increasing. Inflation is driving all of our costs up. We already had to pass a 911 tax. We're looking at potentially making sure we can fund EMS. So there's just a real concern with expenses. So being part of the brainstorming process would be good from our perspective, and also just good for buy-in. And we want 10 elected officials, all 3 commissioners, all 7 councils saying we did everything possible that we could. This is the absolute only way with all the judges, with the sheriff. So
I was going to say the sheriff, the prosecutor, the all the judges, those folks have to have buy-in,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. Commissioner Plummer, yes. your views on the process, I guess.
On the process?
Yeah.
Well, and really none of those talks have started. I was not aware that there was even a drawing until Elevatus reached out to me and said that they had prepared one at the request of the sheriff, which is perfectly fine for him to request. And he has designed it how he wanted to see it. And I believe there's a joint council commissioner work session April the 25th with judges and to also discuss this. And like I said, the discussions are just starting. There have been no other discussions except Elevatus coming at our last commissioners meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as the timeline goes,
you
would have an initial meeting on the 25th, but there's nothing decided.
Oh, Lord, no.
Heck, between now and the election.
I wouldn't even anticipate a shovel going in the ground for probably 24 months. Easy. I mean, because this is a long, you know, it's not as easy as us when we said, hey, we want to replace our maintenance building and get some bids, and they come out and tear it down and put a new pole barn up for the maintenance building. I mean, that one's pretty easy to do, but this is going to take a lot of conversation. And it's just really starting, getting started.
This is, you guys signed up for a race that has got like 400 different issues to take care of.
Yes, it does.
The list, we could sit here for 4 hours discussing things, and we wouldn't even get to the heart of a lot of it. Another massive big ticket issue that that I wanted to get to is county insurance. Mm-hmm. And there's been Courier Times this week published a list. There's, I think, 10 different tort, which is essentially a civil action against the county's insurance, or claims against the county's insurance in the last 12 months, which triggered Travelers Insurance to say, hey, we want out of the Henry mm-hmm. County business. Mm-hmm. And the county has contracted with a new insurance company.
Five
new insurance companies mm-hmm. to replace the one policy. Yeah. But our coverage, or essentially our deductible, is much higher. So there's more exposure for the county.
Premiums and deductibles. So there's a little more, and I've talked to Travis about that. There's more than what he listed in the...
I'm going to adjust your mic just a touch.
Sorry.
Yep, there you
sorry.
Go.
There's a few more than what he listed December the 20th, and I'm just going to speak everything that was done in a public meeting. December the 20th, Travelers did notify Joss Estel that their view of the risk management had changed, and that they were going to cancel. Actually, originally it came across as February the 1st. He worked very hard through the first part of January to get them to move it to March 1st, because there was no way that we could have enough time to find another carrier. So Josh did an outstanding job. He was able to get coverage for everything. Travelers is still maintaining crime property in Inland Marine until July.
That covers our Navy?
Yeah, it covers our Navy.
Okay.
Yeah. Covers equipment. I never understood why equipment is called Inland Marine.
I know,
but it's equipment. I know.
They're based out of Weenie World.
Blue River Coast Guard.
I know. And actually, if truth be told, I had to Google it and see what it meant, because I was like, I have no idea. We don't have any boats, but okay. We were able to get coverage. The unfortunate part is, and the council dealt with that tonight, or is starting to deal with it tonight, our premium is going up $234,000. And our law enforcement deductible, law enforcement liability deductible is going up to $150,000. We do have coverage. And hopefully, if things over the next year, if the risk go down, we're hopeful that when we requote, that we may be able to get a better quote.
All right.
Now, the thing is, and I will say this, we do know that insurance is going up everywhere.
But this is not, I mean, the cancellation is not a common occurrence.
It is not a common occurrence. No, not mid policy at renewal. Yes. But not mid policy. No, it is not a common occurrence.
All right. So you've been dealing with issue from the council side. So now you've got a $250,000 hole to plug this year.
Correct.
And I'm going to have you pull that mic in just a little closer to it. Yep.
Right.
It's directional. So if you talk straight into it, you're going to sound better to the world. What do you agree with the path we've gone down to take corrective actions, or, you know, we're interviewing you as a candidate for commissioner. So I guess if there's a divergence or a different opinion, now's the time to share it.
I think Josh has done a great job, and Shannon Tome and I went and spoke with him. I know he worked very hard to make sure we had coverage that was uninterrupted. Just for reference point for listeners, we went for premiums from 600,000 something to 800,000 something. Mm-hmm. So it's a significant percentage increase. And
it's like your car insurance going up 25%.
Exactly. Right. And my sister's worked insurance her whole career, and her and I had a very long conversation about it. And same thing, insurance is going up everywhere. And there are lines of insurance that insurance companies just don't want to be in as much anymore. And they don't want to put roofs on new buildings every time hail goes through. So deductibles are going up. So there's a lot of economic things going on. As inflation happens, coverage has to increase. It becomes more expensive. So yeah, I appreciate the process so far. I think the next step is to work with Josh to do any type of risk mitigation that can be done. And I know he has some ideas of steps that can be taken by the county to look more favorable in 12 months, because we're on something of a trial basis right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is our best option. Right? There's no easy answer. You know, this is the coverage we have to have. We absolutely have to have insurance.
So are there, like, in the business world, I would assume that most businesses would say, hey, these are the 12 incidents that caught us, and we need to take corrective action to fix these 10 or 12 issues right. that happened.
So if in five of the instances there was any type of similarity, then is there a procedure that needs to be fixed? Or and I think Josh is going to be the key driver into what that looks like. He is going to be one that will have a list of suggestions and who needs to execute mm-hmm. those suggestions to improve the county's risk and hopefully decrease our premium going forward. And then the other piece of it is to hopefully improve our deductible, which increases our exposure quite a bit. So we're going from a $25,000 liability deductible to $150,000. Liability deductible.
Mm-hmm. So every occurrence is $125,000 more of an issue than it was.
Yes. Only if it settles. So many of the instances won't settle for more than $25,000. So we haven't increased our expense, but we've increased our exposure significantly for if something big happens. So that's what we talked about tonight at the council. We really need to set up a fund for when the big,
like a catastrophic fund, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We do. Yep. And that's not something we have funds for right now.
So if that happened today, what would we do?
So we have a little bit of time to prepare.
We sell the lot at Walmart, I guess, what we do, right?
Yeah, well, it is for sale.
Right.
Any instance that's already happened will be covered under our previous insurance. Mm-hmm. And then from a time perspective, if we had a claim next month, it takes time to resolve. So if you look at 2024, our exposure is probably not significantly higher, maybe towards the end of the year. But in preparation for budget session for 2025, it's a big issue.
Okay. All right. It's going to be rapid fire tonight because we got a lot of different topics I wanted to get into. And then we're going to have a chance for you guys to get into any of your priorities as well at the end and clean things up. We as a community were given about $9 million in American Rescue Funds, which is post-COVID. Local governments got that. And there were a lot of conversations about how to spend money. And there was essentially $9 million. And there were folks that said, hey, use it to make sure that we can get through the storm. There were folks that said, hey, let's use it for major infrastructure projects that leave an improvement for the community. We've got this is kind of a checkpoint here. We're at this election. It's a chance to look back and say, hey, how did we do? Do we think we used it effectively? Do we have regrets on what we did? Or maybe I know it's not entirely spent yet. Priorities. I'd like to hear from each of you how you think we've done with that. I know we're still spending, I think $50,000 got approved at one of the recent commissioner meetings for additional public safety or law enforcement mm-hmm. during the eclipse.
Right.
We'll start with you, Susan. I think we've been talking on your side. So
sure.
How have we done? What's the report
looking
card?
Looking back, I think we've done both. I think we've used it as a fill-in for expenses. And I think we've done some good things in the community too. And I think like all, I look at my own household, we have six kids. So we were given this child tax credit money, right? And what happens is when you're given this extra money, it hides the fact that inflation is making everything much more expensive. So we've used kind of this federal money as to pay for expenses that came up as inflation is happening. And an example is we started giving Newcastle EMS $300,000 a year for their EMS services that they provide for the county. That's something that Newcastle EMS had done previously without the $300,000, but their expenses were going up. So we used the $300,000 for that. That's a critical service that wasn't in our budget, but because of inflation, these expenses happen. So we used some of the funding for that. So I don't disagree with those uses because they were necessary, but I think that they hide the fact that our income, our tax receipt income, is no longer sufficient.
At some point, that's a continuous exactly. expense mm-hmm. that doesn't have exactly. a continuous correct. Revenue stream.
And that had to be added into our budget this year. And so so that's just a way of saying we did necessary things with it, but they're going to have to be absorbed by our budget. And then we did good things with it. We gave hazard pay to our safety officers and other, you know, emergency services. And then the money that we've set aside for buildings, and, you know, we've done good things with it, that we bought vehicles that needed to be purchased. But a lot of it was paying for things that should have been paid for previously, as far as letting our car rotations get too far behind, and then paying for things that needed to be paid for right then. And then, you know, looking towards the future. So in a rural county where our tax receipts are constrained, I think we did the best with what we could, but it does open our eyes to a future problem.
The increasing property tax value, the increasing home values and property right. values have to have aided in this as well, right?
A little bit, but the state capped those property taxes increases by 4%. So had they not done that, we would have been in a much better position, because the rise in property values reflects inflation. It reflects our inflation and our costs. So our costs increase significantly. Our wage... But
it's 4% per year, right? So then correct. The next year it can go correct. Up 4 and
right.
4 and 4.
And we did see that. And actually, when we sat down at budget session, had we not added in EMS, and had we not had, I think, several hundred thousand dollars of additional youth detention expenses, you know, we had some heavy hitters, we would have had excess funds that we could have done more with wages like we wanted to. But I see expenses increasing quickly.
Okay. Going back to the $9 million mm-hmm. question, yeah, uh-huh. what's the report card from your seat?
So I think that, yes, we did use them as stopgap. I think we did a lot of good for it. Obviously, the first thing that we had to do right off the bat is spend $1 million for the new sewer line that went out to the prison and the jail. That was...
All these conversations tie together, don't they?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Right.
Yep. And it was needed. And luckily, the state spent, I think, $6 million. We had to come up with $1 million. So that's going to be long term. We did do a lot of good. You know, we did the stipend for all the full time employees, also the emergency law enforcement. We also fire departments, you know, during the COVID shutdown, none of the fire departments could do their fundraisers anymore. So we appropriated $10,000 for each of the volunteer fire departments. And we did buy vehicles. We bought ambulances, we bought police vehicles, and then we appropriated the rest of it in general, because we listed all in the resolution. And then it says the remaining to go to buildings. So we have just a little over $4.5 million left of that fund to go to buildings or anything else. But right now it's set to go to buildings.
It's targeted to buildings.
It is targeted to buildings.
Move
we
it
are,
around.
Yes, we are. We are, because it's been targeted to buildings for probably, I'm going to say close to a year, maybe 9 months is when we said, okay, this is, and then, so every time if something else comes up, the ordinances change and it takes it out, we put that in a separate line item. And then,
so how quickly can you build a building before you run out of that money?
How quickly can we build?
Because
it has to be appropriated by the end of this year, December 31st of 2024. All the money has to be appropriated. We have till December 31st of 2026 to have it all expended.
So that's the courthouse and et cetera. By the end of 26, that has to be completed.
Oh, yeah. And we're looking at probably, as a matter of fact, Henry Stelma from DLZ and I were at the historical preservation because we're getting ready to do a couple of test windows, one in the courthouse, one in the Masonic building, because we're going to be replacing all of the windows. And we want to make sure that we're not going to run into anything when we take out one of the old windows. And so we were before them to get the COA. And they were
COA asked, means? Certificate of occupancy?
Yes, certificate of approval
okay.
from the historical preservation, since it is in the historic district and it's a historic building. And they asked if we would have it done within 3 years. And Henry was like, oh, yeah, once we get started, we're looking about 15 to 18 months. So plenty of time to get it all extended.
All right. Next group of Zach, you're a co-host too, by the way. So I swear to God, if you don't say something soon, we're going to dock your pay.
Hello, Zach. All you have to do is say hello. You're good.
Yeah. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
I let him sit over there tonight.
I see him run all the time, and I'm amazed.
The art money thing has been so interesting, because I think when it came out, there was like lots of strings.
Yes, there was.
And then as time's gone by, the strings have kind of been cut off. But then, yeah, there's been like, I mean, like, I think everybody has experienced through this COVID thing, like, oh yeah, the government, the feds were throwing around a lot of money. Right. Got, but then you came out the other side and you're like, wait a minute.
What, like, do we have to show for it?
Yeah, like eggs are $3.
Right.
Like chocolate milk for a hot minute was like $4 or $5, whatever. Yep. And it's like, so yeah, we're still kind of coming out the other end of that, figuring out where everything is. I know that from, I joked before, he's like, yeah, you're going to coast. I'm like, I'm city guy, I show up to the city council meetings, but I know that, like, I take notes. Police cars went up a lot. Like, I think a couple of years ago, they bought a slew of cars, and the city did, and they were about $35,000 a piece. And I think this last order, they were like $40,000+ a piece. So they went up like about $10,000 a piece. So that all that stuff's gone way up.
Well, and I believe that, now I have nothing to base this on, except the federal government changes their mind every other day. I was asked the other day, how do you think that across the country, ARP money, that the majority of the money has been spent? And my answer was probably not. And, you know, the conversation then turned to, you know, they could look at this and they could go, wait a minute, it's not being spent. They'll either claw it back or put a lot more restrictions on it. You know, maybe it's going to only go to roads, or maybe saying that that's going to happen, or I have, but it's a possibility.
Even though there are very legitimate reasons why it hasn't been spent,
right?
As far as planning period, mm-hmm. and then just trying to get a project started, and then construction companies being behind. You know, there's reasons.
It just takes a long time.
They could mm-hmm. change it, but
yeah. And I believe when we got ours, I think there was like 9 or 10 counties that refused it in the state of Indiana.
Oh. Millions of dollars, mm-hmm. really?
Because they didn't want the headache. Because last year,
free money's a bit.
At audit time, they audited all of our federal funds, and you know that's a very long and arduous process. When they come in, they start auditing the ARP funds and everything. We did well. We passed, obviously, but you know it was very time consuming.
The relaxing of constraints saved us money,
mm-hmm.
because absolutely we didn't have to do as much documentation, mm-hmm. legal work, etc. So that was
compliance
a benefit.
Got a little easier,
mm-hmm. right? And you know, easier is cheaper.
So the other side, commissioner's office is the county executive. So we have people that listen to the show, believe it or not, all over the country. They're not all just based here in Henry County. So this is educational for everybody. So I try to reset and give a general explanation at times when we get into extreme nuance. But the county commissioners are the executive branch. There's three folks on the board. We're interviewing one of the three seats tonight. You have a tremendous amount of appointments, mm-hmm. as a county commissioner when it comes to boards, to department head involvement with department heads. How do you view, I guess, your time as commissioner in doing this,
mm-hmm.
and in the model you have in saying, hey, here's how I'm going to decide who I'm putting on boards, who's going to be a department head, how county government's going to operate? Cause you get a lot of, latitude in determining how, mm-hmm. and shaping how administration of county government works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Partially because I was a park board member, we have taken notice of the difficulty it's taken to settle on a park board and make up and getting folks that are willing to do the job. So some of these boards have had tremendous amounts of turnover.
Yes.
So tell us how that operates. If you think we're doing well, if you think there's room for improvement, and how we select the folks we do.
So, and yes, we do a tremendous amount of board appointments, where there's library board, RDC, park board, planning commission. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of appointments.
I'm not asking for a board position, by the way. I'm good.
Okay.
I have one.
When
Zach, though, he's eligible. Look at him over there. He's got nothing but time, especially on Thursdays.
Nothing but time.
Oh, my goodness. I will say, because you mentioned park board, it did take us a while to get. Now, I don't think that any one person that has been on the park board in the past 3 years was a bad appointment, but finding that balance of them all being able to work together, and I think the park board is doing it has calmed down. They are doing well. They've got a lot of projects going, but when I look at somebody from a board, you know, I look at their background. I look at you know, will they be a critical thinker? Will they challenge? Are they going to be if as much as I can tell, are they just going to be a yes person, or are they going to be just quiet and not using their voice? So there's a, you know, kind of a, you know, you want to find that right balance of anybody that's on a board. You don't want somebody just to be on a board just to fill a seat. So, and we do, so like with the library board and some of the other appointments, RDC, whether it's the county RDC, we will get, suggestions from, for example, Corey Murphy will bring to us and says, you know, this appointment is up. These two people have served on this board for this many years. They're willing to serve again. And we also look at that, try to get some consistency, because you don't want to be replacing everybody every year or every 2 years or however long their appointments are for. You want to also maintain some consistency there.
All right. Any view from your side on the board mm-hmm. appointments and how we interface with executive, with department heads and board members?
Yeah. So I think I agree. The park board is working really well together right now. And from my perspective, you know, if I stepped into the commissioner role, that would be what I would be looking for in an appointment, as someone that, had the skill set, had the time, and was going to advocate for their position and have their own opinion, but be willing to move forward if their opinion isn't voted on, and, you know, get behind what the group is doing if their advocated for opinion didn't win that time. And I think that that's, you know, part of an important part of working together with people is, you know, state your opinion, fight for your opinion if you need to, but then if the group votes and the group decides, you're going to move forward as a group and try to, you know, make the best of that choice for the county.
So one of the boards that has a lot of influence and has a lease with the county is the Henry County Expo Board.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they have about 65 years left on a 70-year lease inside of Memorial Park. And that I know that the county commissioners and the Memorial Park Board work with that group. Is there any commentary on where we are in getting something resolved in a building operational for the Henry County Expo from the commissioner seat or from the county government side?
So sometime last year, and again, months get away from me. So, but it was last year, a group of people was selected. I was not part of that group. It was Community Foundation, EDC was involved. A commissioner was involved. A council member was involved. Other stakeholders, I can't remember who all the stakeholders were. I believe somebody from Ball State come down, kind of doing a feasibility study, you know, see where they can go. I know that report or reports have not been completed yet, and to see what needs to be done and how to move forward with this. Actually, I was supposed to meet with a couple people from the Expo Board this week, but their schedules got crazy and so did mine. So we'll be meeting next week. Not sure what the conversation is going to be, but hopefully something can be resolved so that we get a finished building out there. You know, like I said, always want them to succeed. We just don't know how to move forward funding wise.
And I know that the issues that
this, and that's the elephant
this
in
is,
the room.
This is like an 8-year long uh-huh. project, it predates all of you being in county government.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pregnant with it now, right?
Yes, we are.
We have to have the expo somehow. Susan, what are your thoughts on where we're at and what the path forward is?
Yeah, so there's a new expo board. I don't know all the members, but I know that they are working hard to try to figure out what the future looks like. And they've had discussions with the park board about giving back some of the extra footprint and the county taking that land back. And myself and another council representative spoke with them, said, you know, if that did happen and you did give some of that land back, the council could potentially look at using some food and beverage money to put the playground back and put that external part of the footprint back together for the community. That hasn't come to vote yet. That's just some discussion. While the process is going on with the expo, trying to figure out if there is a future. So if it is a feasible project and the expo board is able to relaunch it with a professional fundraiser and see if it really is viable, perhaps the surrounding area around it could still be used by the community during that time. And we'd like to see some type of time frame be put in place and Yeah.
So is there, in your view, as a potential commissioner, as a commissioner, is there any tool county government has to try to get this to a head and to get something resolved?
Well, I will say that Commissioner Dellinger had actually started this process a while back, into some discussions of lessening the footprint of the expo. That kind of got stalled. I'm not sure why. But it kind of got stalled. So, I'm glad to see that conversation has started back up again. I don't know that if he has been a part of that conversation, at all. You would have to ask him that question. I don't track what
he's up for re-election too. I would guess you'll see him in here in April.
Yeah. I don't track what every commissioner is working on and doing. I'm glad to see that conversation might be is picking back up again.
Okay.
And you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see where all the feasibility comes and, you know, what we all can do to get it moving forward.
I think if the expo gives back some of that land, that will be a contract renegotiation. And
the lease will have to be redone.
There would be an opportunity to put a time frame, mm-hmm. a reasonable time frame that is good for the expo board, you know. What's a reasonable time frame to complete the project? And if not in that time frame, then the
lease reverting back to the county or something happening.
Right. Yeah. Right.
We are just full of fun issues tonight. So the next topic we have in the notes, by the way, if you're a patron, you got the notes, you kind of see where we're going here. We've developed a real awareness for a homelessness issue in Henry County that I don't know that was very well known to folks. I don't think it's new, but the new township trustee, Travis Lyle, took the old YMCA, which is the township trustee's office, and made it a homeless shelter. And that lasted 45 or 60 days. And then the insurance conversation came up again, and between insurance and some city building commissioner issues, no longer had a homeless shelter.
Correct.
So now about two blocks from where this building is, about a block from the county courthouse and county government spots, we now have a sidewalk homeless encampment in downtown Newcastle. Is there any influence of county government to deal with this, to interface, and maybe the health department, other groups or ways county is involved?
Yeah. So I do know that others are having conversations. So this piece of ground is owned by the Henry Township trustee. So for the county to, you know, if someone said, hey, you guys need to go in and clean this up, we have no jurisdiction on that piece of property. I will say that, and this is not the only homeless camp that it is here in the city. There's homeless camps in other locations. I think there's some.
This is the most. This is the one downtown that's most visual.
Yes, it is the most visual.
So I think it's made people realize.
The tent has been removed from the sidewalk, the very large tent that was out there. It was not out there today when I went over to the Elks to have lunch. So I have for several months now been part of a group of people that has been having conversations about a women's transition center, about a homeless shelter and a recovery center.
These are county.
These are,
or just community items.
Community items that
I might get a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yep, am I still doing it again?
Yep, you're good.
These are community items that they will be coming to the commissioners to, and then to the council for use of opioid funds to help. So we did appropriate $130,000 for a women's transition center. So that as women are typically what we're looking at is women that are coming out of jail, out of the JCAP program will transition into this home. And the program is more of a financial literacy program. And there's a lot of guidelines that they will have to go through. It's a 15-month program. So that is in the works. We were working, we did, I think up to $30,000. I don't remember the exact figure, because we thought that the guest house in the West Old Westminster Church, that was going to become a homeless shelter. There were issues with that. The money has still been appropriated, but I think there is another group that is willing to take that over and do some sort of an emergency shelter, homeless shelter. That will be coming before the commissioners at our next meeting on the 27th. And then also on the next meeting on the 27th, a couple people are coming. They are starting a women's recovery center over by on the southeast side, over by Foursquare. So a lot of things are going on. It's just government runs very slow, and well, we've appropriated money, but also just getting everything them set up, their facility. Nothing has gone as quickly as we had hoped. So while we do see more, and it's become more visual to us of the homeless or others in need, we are working to come up with a solution. The community is working to come up with a solution. We're just looking to fund it through our help fund, the initial start with our opioid funds.
Okay.
Which is a perfect opportunity to expel those funds.
Any thoughts on your side, Susan?
I don't have anything brilliant. I saw the tent outside of the YMCA for the first time a week or so ago, and I was very surprised. I told my kid, that's the first time I've seen that, and definitely very aware of the strain of our economy right now and fear it's going to continue to worsen. And so I have had just some visibility to what Bobby shared, and I think it's great. I always prefer a private solution when possible, and I know that that's perhaps, you know, the county can participate in some startup options, but love to see private funding come together in the community, because I think that the problem's going to continue to get worse, is my fear. I hope not.
Is there, and this is for either of you, if we have this information, but do we know, are these folks that have been maybe through the criminal justice system, folks that have been through the hospitals, or do we have any identifying path that we've gotten to get to this point?
I believe the answer is yes to all of those questions.
Okay.
At some point, you know, I don't want to label anyone that's homeless. I do know back in December, Angela was working very hard. There was a lady that was
the health department.
Angela Cox. Yes. She was working very hard because there was a lady that was very pregnant during the cold, living in her car. I don't know what her circumstances were. But, you know, I think we're seeing all walks of life. We're seeing maybe some with mental health, maybe some that have addiction issues. I don't know their stories. But my guess is it's probably an all of the above answer. Those who maybe have been priced out of the real estate market, you know, can't afford rent.
I agree.
I think it's an all of the above issue.
I know the sheriff's department has been talking about a potential reentry program that they would be starting. And I don't know if that would help, you know, the one demographic that you mentioned, if they've been coming out of jail, are they having trouble reentering society? But when orange juice is $6-$7, you see people that could have potentially been making it before that are not, there are not now.
Yeah. Like I said, these are tough issues tonight.
They are tough. I mean, and it's sad.
And there's no easy answer.
No, there is no easy answer.
I know the city and dealing with it too. Some of the people are just like, I don't think they want to really, you know, we're right. They don't really want to participate in society in the normal way. But some of them, I know they try to get them help and they find them someplace to go and then they just leave.
Yes.
And so some of them like repeatedly, they don't want help. And I think some of them are kind of like, probably tired of the world as it's currently operating, and they just want to kind of unplug, and they'd rather live the homeless life than be stuck in. I mean, we're all kind of feeling, I don't think everybody kind of feels like you're in a hamster wheel of dealing with food prices,
correct?
Working more to then pay for the food prices, and then
paying more gas to go to the store.
Paying more for the gas. Gas jumps 50 cents at a time and then trickles down or whatever and does weird stuff. I think it's really difficult. I know the city's been struggling as well to try and like both help the people and find and give them the kind of help that they want, because sometimes it's not what people think. They think that they just want to give free stuff and be put somewhere, and some of them, that's not what they want. You have to kind of get down to the core issue of why they're in the situation. And
so a good example is many years ago, so I've worked IT for many years, and I had a very large church client in Carmel, and one of the ministers was packing backpacks to take to the homeless, and he said, I'm going to go see my uncle. And I just looked at him. He said, before you give me a judgmental look as to why my uncle's homeless, he said, we have all offered him a home.
Yeah.
And he said,
It's his choice.
Mm-hmm. It's his choice. He said, so I visit him. I take him things. So I think you have that gamut of, I choose to do this, all the way up to, I have nowhere to go and I don't know what I'm going to do. And that's the difficult part of it. Hmm. It's sad.
Very sad.
So this is the open-ended question Dakota has learned to put in every episode. And he called it king for a day, but I think that's wrong, Zach. It'd be queen for the day.
Yeah.
With the ladies that are here.
Short-sighted with his notes making
today. It is. His copy pasta from last year was a direct failure, and he's not here to defend himself. So we're going to blame him.
That's okay. Not offended.
Queen for the day.
Monarch for a day.
Monarch for the day, I think is exactly what we should have. If you were monarch for the day, Susan,
oh my goodness.
What's the one thing that you would fix? You didn't have to answer to anybody. You're county commissioner and you could make this change. And it doesn't have to be like, I'm going to make world peace.
Right.
But like there's like one policy change, one thing you can do that as county commissioner that you would affect and say, hey, we're going to do this.
So I'm not going to shoot for world peace, but what I really want is relational peace in the courthouse, in county government. I believe really strongly that more minds can make better decisions if they're really listening to each other. And so I would really love to sit down, all commissioners, all council, department heads, people in the Justice Center, and brainstorm the best solutions for the county. Because our funds are so constrained right now that if one person has an idea that can be incorporated, I think it should be. So that would be my priority, would be to be a good listener and be a good collaborator and generate conversation in county government that could really benefit others, benefit the community.
So we've got one vote for collaboration and getting along. Mm-hmm. Monarch plumber. What are we fixing? You've had 4 years to think about this one.
I have had 4 years to think about this one, and it's going to surprise everybody. If I was king,
legal
for
chickens,
queen,
here
monarch,
comes.
Queen, or king for the day. Well, what'd you say?
Legal chickens. Here we go.
Hey, we've got legal chickens.
I have to have 5 acres and 14 mules, but I can have two hens.
Yeah, you can have two hens.
All right.
So
pull that mic away, though, too, so they can hear you.
I am so sorry. I do this all the time. If I could make something happen by the snap of my finger, I would want more citizen involvement in the government because we don't have that at all.
I mean, it's
anymore.
Gotten better. We can watch a county commissioner meeting at frames a minute. Now
we are getting ready to upgrade that. So, in full disclosure,
4 frames a minute. Yeah. What is it? I don't know.
Yeah, in full disclosure,
it's way better than it was 10 years ago. That's not a cheap shot. That is
listen,
that is worlds better.
In 2016, 17, 18, 19, and 20, what did you have? Bobby Plummer sitting there live streaming on our Facebook page. So, it is better. And in full disclosure, that was put in before I was in office, but we are getting ready to upgrade that and make it better.
It's going to improve.
Yes, but
we're going to learn mic discipline.
Yes.
Everybody's going to have a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to have, we're ordering more microphones. It's going to be better. You're going to be able to see the speaker.
Yep.
There's going to be a camera back here so you can see who's speaking and not just seeing their rear end. But in all seriousness,
the men my age really do appreciate having their bald spots on display for the entire town.
In all seriousness, I would love to see more citizen input coming to the meetings, being more involved because when it all comes down to it, we are here to work for the citizens, I don't work for myself. We are here to represent the citizens and do what's best for them. So I would love to see them.
The one thing you're going to do as a monarch is make me go to a meeting.
Sure.
If I vote for you, you're going to make me come to a meeting.
No, I would hope that you would invite me to come to
the meeting.
Everybody is invited to come to all of our meetings. And you know, we have our meetings, at 11 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock at night. So hopefully everybody can come.
So you get two to choose from. You get two time slots to choose
from. Yes, you do. Uh-huh.
Is that when meetings should be?
11 and 6. Well, there's always a rub between when your for when the council members are available to come, and when's best for the department heads. When I first took office, we moved our meetings to 6. So it would be, but people would be done working, citizens would be able to come, but that was hard for department heads to come. And we were, you know, we heard some comments, well, I have to hang around after hours to come to the meeting. And so when you look out and there's one citizen and the audience and the department heads are telling you they'd like to come to your meetings. So I don't think there's one perfect time for a meeting. So I guess they split the difference, which is not a bad idea.
And it allows those who work second shift to come at 11 o'clock.
Right.
And those who work first shift to come at 6 o'clock.
Because the counter argument to it is hey, are millennials or Gen Zers going to run for office if they've got a Monday to Friday job and the meeting's at 11 o'clock, right?
Sure.
They want the job. Mm-hmm. They want to participate. And well, hell, I can't be a part of that. That's for retired.
Yeah, we have a council member who can't come till he's done working, and we want him to be able to come. Mm-hmm. So we've bumped the time back a little bit. So.
You've attended every, along with running like 800 straight days, at least 1 mile, you've attended nearly every city council meeting for 4 years. Department heads are there at a 7 o'clock meeting?
6:30. And
I think most of the department heads are there.
I'll be real honest. Yeah. Except for like one, there's a couple, there's been a track record of a couple of the people that don't get there consistently, but for the most part, yeah. Greg Phipps is there. Lee Walker's there. And then sometimes the, EMS or just the, kind of the emergency services, those various departments, the chief might not be there, but there's somebody there in the seat because they might be out doing something. So assistant chief or something. Yeah. So for the most part, they're almost always there. Yeah. There's a particular seat I could tell you that person might regret about showing up, but I won't say.
Hey, okay. If they didn't want to get called out for it, they should have somebody in their seat.
I'm not going to say
that. All right. We'll check the tape. We'll check the tape. Yeah. Somebody's on notice. If you are the city department,
this is actually an elected official.
There's an empty chair.
That'll narrow it down.
There's an empty chair, and it's been noticed by Zach over there. You should just go sit in that chair.
I've never done that.
And then if somebody shows up and says you have to go, say, well, are you elected to this office? Because I've never seen this chair filled.
I've always wanted to see what would happen if I sat down just in one of the council person's chairs, because sometimes when they're not there. Because I sit in them I'm on a board, so I always feel weird. Like I'm sitting in so-and-so's chair for this board meeting or whatever. So it's kind of strange. But yeah, for the most part, the department has to do a good job of showing up because, we always have to get water main up breaks from Greg. Just like how many days of overtime did he get paid this week for something, which I think it's been quiet for a minute, so I'm gonna knock on wood for him. But yeah, for the most part, they do a good job, and they go around. That's the most interesting part of those meetings, is they go, I call it around the council. That's how it's in my notes, around the council. And they go to council, and they go to all the department heads, and they'll talk about what's going on, and that's when you learn what's going on in town. So yeah, it would be nice if more citizens showed up, because one thing I think people lack, a very fundamental, one of my least favorite things to see on Facebook is, and I'm one of those people that waste too much time arguing with people on Facebook, is they're like, oh, they're all lying in their pockets, and they think, and that's corruption. Mm-hmm. I was like, you're only saying that because you have no idea how government works.
Exactly.
Like you go and you'll see that like they're trying to do this, they're trying to do that, and so once in a while, like, they'll be like, hey, can I use this fund to do this that this person's asking for? And like the attorney has to say, yes, you can, or no, you can't. Mm-hmm. Or if you can, this is how this has to work. And so there's systems and processes, and you know, people complain about, oh, the skate park got built, but our potholes didn't get filled. I'm like, that's two different things, guys.
Yeah.
They literally can't do that. They can't have taken this money and moved into there. So it's good.
I will tell you about a week or so ago, somebody said to me, and they said, well, you make a lot of money as a commissioner. And I go, I don't think so. Now, I knew what I was going to get paid when I ran for the job. I said, what do you think I make as a commissioner? And they said, oh, probably about $80,000 a year. And I said, listen.
First of all, if they wanted to know hard enough, they could Google it.
Listen, if this position paid $80,000 a year, you would have 6 people running at every election.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Especially in a place like here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's real good money in Henry County. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And now,
Susan, how much do you have to raise our taxes to get a commissioner that costs 80 grand a year?
A lot.
Well, I would considering we pay have to let me do the math really quick.
Oh, my God.
About 0.015%. 0.015%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To get all three of us there.
Don't expect that specific tax increase to come.
That's not going
to
happen.
Thankfully, they can't pass that one right now.
Yeah. No, that's not going to happen.
All right. So, this is where we're into the final thoughts, the cleanup, that the priorities that you have that we didn't, maybe we didn't cover here, because this was a shotgun approach of a lot of issues that Dakota and myself and Zach thought about. But there may be other motivations you've had for running and things that are priority for you. So if you have those, tell us. If you want help on the campaign, yard signs aren't free, door knocking materials aren't free. This is where you're supposed to ask for money. Give us the final thoughts.
So, you know, my primary reason, I'm running because I want to see people work together. And it pains me to see an issue and people not able to sit down and talk about it. And I really think that there is an issue in our county government with people communicating effectively, with all of the decision makers coming to the table together early in the process. So there's buy-in, and so there's brainstorming. And so that's my primary reason. And if you want to make a contribution to my campaign, you can donate. I mean, actually, right now you'd have to literally write me a check because I don't have an online method. So there's not a lot to advertise, but you can write a check to Committee to Elect Susan Hoon. And shortly I'll have an electronic way to accept donations. So I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Zach, cleanup issues, things. Maybe you've been watching the chat room and we've got questions we were supposed to clean up.
No, I've been answering the unrelated questions, but I've been answering questions and hitting up people. But I'm going to give a shout out to Newcastle and to the greater community, because we made social media in a big way over the weekend for a positive thing and a thing that most people my age can barely remember. The Fieldhouse sold out on Saturday. And the pictures were amazing. Unfortunately, Newcastle wasn't playing there. It was a Kokomo and Fishers regional game. But we were going out to eat and the people we were with, I was like, we're going out of town. And they're like, why? I'm like, because they're hosting a tournament game. And we rolled by Bundy and Parkview Drive, and which nobody knows why it's called Parkview Drive anymore, because there's no school on it to call Parkview anymore. And the cars were parked all up and down Parkview Drive. They were in the bank parking lot. They were in the church next to the bank parking lot. They were in, and then you went up by Baker Park. They're parked all the way around Baker Park, all through Baker Park. Kind of a little bit bummed. Ran through Baker Park yesterday, and there's a lot of ruts through Baker Park where people are driving through the obviously soft grass that night.
2 inches of rain.
Yeah, 2 inches of rain. But get online, look. Because like basically, if there was a page that was dedicated to like the greatness of high school sports and basketball in particular, they got a picture of the Fieldhouse, because that place full is spectacular. It's a shrine to basketball. All the schools were coming through during the week and practicing there, like they were coming to play. So Kokomo sent, like, every team drove to Newcastle during the week, and some of them took the kids out of school to do it, to practice, so they could experience what the Fieldhouse was going to look like and feel like. Mm-hmm. Because we take it for granted here. But if you watch the news and you see like Ben Davis's gym, it looks like Blue River's gym. It's just bigger on the sides.
Way to dunk on Blue River.
Well, no, it looks like that. But like, if it is Blue River's gym, if you look at it close enough, it doesn't look any different than any gym in Indianapolis almost. You have to get up to the higher tiers to get the extra seats or whatever. Looks the same as Shenandoah's or Trizy, all look kind of similar. Newcastle's is different. We have a different gym. They stick a couple thousand people behind the basketball goals, which is probably why they were practicing. It's a lot. If you see Hoosiers and they go to Hinkle, Newcastle has a mini Hinkle. And so that was cool to see. And it was, everybody loved it. They're going to host a semi-state this weekend. Ben Davis is coming to town. So Big Ben Davis is coming to Newcastle to play their basketball game, because we got better things than they do. We have a nicer gym. So that was cool to see. And I mean, even the signs, people my age won't even remember. The signs that have the map of where to sit is WP Chrysler High School is how they're labeled. Those signs that piece has been floating around that long. So that was cool. Anytime your town gets around social media, nobody's toothless, nobody's hurt, nothing burned, and like they're not interviewing somebody that can't speak proper English, you're like, yes. And that was this weekend. So
the only struggle was that they parked in the grass
a little bit. Yeah. And I was just like, why is, I bet they didn't anticipate that. When was the last time the Fieldhouse sold out? Like, I think somebody said it was like a Batesville game a couple of years ago, and prior to that, you were looking at pre-class basketball.
When I was in high school.
Yes.
Yes.
So
that was an enthusiastic yes, Zach.
Man, I remember class basketball.
Yes, so I remember when I was in high school, it, you know, the sectionals, I mean, it was packed in there.
Legit.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
So that was the shout out to Newcastle, representing the gym still doing its thing.
Final thoughts from you, Bobby?
Things we need to clean up, maybe things that weren't in our scattershot approach tonight.
Well, I think you hit a lot of the big items. So the reason I am running again is obviously I want to see a lot of these big items through. When I decided to run in 2019, and obviously ran in 2020, it's about representing the citizens of the county. I was elected to be their voice and to represent them. Government's not easy. If we all got along and sang kumbaya, it'd be a great thing, but then there would be no checks and balances. So when I came into office, I immersed myself into that office. I am available and present and responsive. Today, three citizens came to my office today. Just walked into the courthouse and said, hey, I need to talk to a commissioner. I was there to be able to.
What kind of issues did they bring up today?
One lady wanted to file a complaint. I won't go into who, what, where, when, or why. One was a trustee with some questions. And then another one was coming to talk to me about trails and some ground and some different things. So the gamut.
Yeah. That's just the lottery of what you get in the day.
That's just the lottery of what you get in the day. I mean, somebody may walk up the stairs and I ask them if they need some help and they're like, I need to be in circuit 3 at 1:00. And I'm like, okay, let me go back down these stairs.
Well, you missed it by 25 years. Yeah. It's across the road now.
Yeah. And we direct traffic. But no, in all seriousness, I was elected to represent the citizens, of the county. I think I've done a very good job of it. Have I been perfect? No, not even close. Nobody's perfect. But I think that, my priorities are straight. I want to serve the county for the next 4 years as well. If you want to donate to my campaign, it's Bobby Plummer, committee to elect Bobby Plummer. I'll take cash and, I'll come to you. Cash.
If you give her $100, she has to write it down.
Yes,
though. Those
if you give
rules.
Me $100, I have to put your name down. If it's 99 or less, we can just put it into the account. Yard signs, obviously, I have yard signs. If anybody needs yard signs, they can hit me up, either on my Facebook page, campaign Facebook page, personal Facebook page, or they can call me at 317-699-2404.
Very good. Final thoughts for me here real quick before we sign off. We're just a touch over an hour. Without Dakota's supervision, we didn't have a 3-hour episode, Dakota, Zach. So you should be, we should be happy that happened.
We did okay.
Because there was a very real risk that without any adult supervision, this could have gone till it got dark outside. I can't.
So you're saying he's the adult?
Yeah, he's on the inside. Dakota's 94 years
okay.
old. Yeah,
he's already been through his Buick phase.
Yeah, he's already had his Buick, and now he's just looking for places to be buried in Florida. Saturday, you are going to get a bonus edition of the show. Newcastle on Tap is happening. I assume that we're going to have an extra, I don't know, 1,500 people in town for that, plus the basketball crowd.
Newcastle
is going to be busy. Unbelievably busy this weekend, which is a great thing.
To Newcastle on Tap.
Hopefully they can spend enough money that these ladies don't have to raise our taxes anymore. Sure. And our financial woes will be solved just based on food and beverage money that comes in this weekend from all of the folks that are coming in for basketball. I want to say very much a thank you to both of them for putting their name on the ballot. They've both been serving in county government and they're getting to be pretty experienced. Pretty exciting that we've got two ladies that are willing to serve as well. Politics gets male dominated way too often. So it's pretty special that you both have put yourself forward and bring your unique experiences. And I've been through the candidate cycle myself a number of times. It's not easy. It's thankless work. And if we didn't have two people running, we wouldn't have these conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's important. That's right. And I'm appreciative of both of you for doing that.
Thanks for having me.
So it's important that people do get the information, get registered. You've got a few more days before we get to that 30-day mark. Next week's show will be back on Thursday. We will be starting our county council candidate series. So we have three of them lined up. Then we're going to take a week off for spring break because we can only do this so much. And then in April, you'll start to see the rest of the invitations go out, and hopefully we'll have a full roster between now and the next election day. With that, one more thank you to Wildlands Flowers for being a sponsor of the candidate series and Inconel Brewhouse. We will see you a week from tomorrow.